morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us. Hope you have a nice weekend planned. We'll help you with something good to watch on Film Week coming up. Our critics tell us about all the new movies, including one that's coming with a tremendous amount of attention and Oscar buzz, Nomadland, from writer-director Chloe Zhao. Frances McDormand stars in the film about a woman who leaves the Nevada rural town where she lives because the jobs dry up. She hits the road across the West, and it's the details of her life that take up the film Nomadland. We'll hear what our critics think about that. We've also got the Hong Kong set movie Twilight's Kiss, about two older men who begin a relationship and have to deal with the multiple family concerns that come out of that relationship. And Test Pattern, a thriller starring Brittany S. Hall and Will Brill. Shatara Michelle Ford is the writer-director of Test Pattern. But first, in this hour, we've got a lot of news to talk about, beginning with the very latest on COVID-19. My pleasure to welcome Dr. Robert Kim Farley, professor of epidemiology and community health sciences at the UCLA Fielding School of Public Health. Dr. Kim Farley, so good to have you with us again.
Larry, it's a pleasure to be back on the program.
Let's start first with the thousands of vaccination appointments that were canceled today at Los Angeles City-run facilities. LA County vaccination facilities are still open and taking their appointments, but let's talk about what happened at the multiple city facilities, because they just couldn't get the vaccine through the weather of the Midwest and South.
Yes, you're right. The Moderna vaccine, which was using hubs in Tennessee and Kentucky, basically just flights canceled, getting trucks and things to the airports, et cetera, have really put things to a halt. So they've had to basically hold off of being able to send vaccine, and that then means that we have to postpone some of the vaccines being used at the city sites. The Pfizer vaccine hasn't yet had that same problem, so some of the county sites that are using Pfizer will still be able to continue with the doses being given out.
And again, anybody who was scheduled for today at a city site, you should have received your cancellation notice yesterday, late yesterday, about the LA city sites.
12,500, in fact, should have gone out for postponing it. And then they will be also told as soon as they can reschedule and given priority for that rescheduling.
And do we have any idea when that Moderna vaccine will arrive here and people will be able to get those doses?
It's not for sure. It depends a bit on this weather that's kind of out of people's control. But if we're fortunate, it should be by next week.
All right. Let's talk about the good news from Pfizer, the pharmaceutical company, announcing that a single dose of its vaccine is highly effective and that it doesn't require the ultra cold storage after all. This seems like pretty big news.
I think you're right to pick this out for your listenership, that this is big news because of the fact that minus 70 degrees that this thing was originally tested for and required were specialized freezers that just are very expensive and difficult to come by. But this latest news that the company now feels that it can be kept at commercial storage freezing temperatures means that basically we'll be able to make it available in much wider areas where they wouldn't have the specialized storage facilities. They've put forward to the FDA the data on that. So hopefully within the next couple of weeks or so, we should be able to see something confirming that.
So does this, in your view, substantiate the UK approach? I think Israel did the same thing, where they really emphasized the first dose. They worried less about second doses, get as much initial dose out there as possible. And then even if it's longer than the second dose was administered in the clinical trial, just let that be. Do you think that Pfizer's announcement substantiates that approach?
Yes, I think there are a couple of approaches one can use for the distribution of vaccine. One is to go specifically by what the manufacturer had tested and recommended, which was the two-dose schedule for Pfizer, separated by the 21 days, and for Moderna by the 28 days. That's the ideal, but I think the point that you're bringing out is that as data is found to show that, in fact, even one dose is highly effective, especially against severe disease. That is another approach that can be used. I'm hopeful that we'll see that increasing numbers of vaccine being turned out here in the United States. They're expecting, you know, some 3 million per week by the 1st of March here in California, for example, going up to 4 million per week by the end of April. Those sorts of increases will make a little bit less pressure on trying to go just a single dose route. But I think it's something, again, that we'll be looking to CDC and others to make that balance off between the complexity of doing just a one-dose schedule and trying to get people back before at least the 6 weeks is up, which is what the CDC is currently recommending as the greatest distance between the first and second dose.
We welcome your calls with your questions for UCLA Fielding School of Public Health physician and professor of epidemiology, Dr. Robert Kim Farley. We're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also ask on social media using either our Facebook page or tweeting at AirTalk with your questions that way, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. I was seeing an article in the Wall Street Journal, Dr. Kim Farley, about physicians in the EU who are not taking the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine because they perceive it to be less effective and they have more side effects than the mRNA vaccines from Pfizer or Moderna. And after the EU was in a tussle with AstraZeneca over the terms of their contract getting enough doses, now it seems hard to get people to take the AstraZeneca. Your thoughts about, you know, what we're seeing there, and do you think that sort of issue where, you know, people are going to be holding out to get just one or two types of vaccines over others could be an issue here?
Well, I think that it's best for your listenership to understand that the best vaccine for them is the one that they can get. And so I think that at this stage, AstraZeneca is also a very effective vaccine. Yes, it may not be quite as effective as the Pfizer or Moderna. But again, in terms of effectiveness for the purposes of actually preventing severe illness and death, it's still very, very good vaccine. So I think that that's the real issue, is that we have a situation where we still have vaccine shortage because of the amounts available. Basically, any additional new vaccine manufacturer that gets approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use, something to be welcomed and embraced, I think, by all, because it will be protective.
Dr. Marty Makary of Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, who's been a guest with us on the program, he was on for his most recent book a few months ago. He wrote a piece also in the Wall Street Journal in which he said he thought herd immunity was coming as soon as April. And he talked with a number of public health officials and physicians who agreed with him on that based on what we're seeing in the decline of cases. But they urged him not to write about it or talk about it for fear that the public would change its behavior and become lax, and that more people would become sick and die as a result if they were aware of this. And I wonder if you would comment on it, because I think the theory here that he presents is that there's much more hidden immunity from people who were asymptomatic and never tested than we understood. You couple that with rapidly increasing numbers of vaccinations, that we're going to reach that herd immunity threshold quite soon, in the next couple of months. What do you think of his contention?
Well, I think obviously the sooner that we can reach a herd immunity or community immunity, I often call it being a way of, again, reducing the amount of circulation of the virus in the community, that is to be welcomed. I do think that we actually have a lot of hidden infection that has occurred, because we do know there's a lot of asymptomatic infection with COVID-19, and people then can get immune without even knowing that they actually had been exposed or had the disease. So it's been estimated maybe even up to 30 to 40% of people here in Los Angeles County, for example, may already have immunity. And nationwide, there's some estimates up to as much as 50% or so. And I think actually what's even more important is, where is that immunity? In other words, it's not like it's average in the whole society. The people that have come down with natural disease, many of them have been those that have not been following guidance, not wearing masks, not physical distancing. So the herd immunity, if you will, in that particular population set that has been out and about when they really shouldn't have been, is probably even much higher, could be twice as much. So that's another reason why we may be seeing the dramatic drop-offs, not only because people are no longer having the back-to-back major holidays like we had, but it's also possible that we will be seeing the fact that that herd immunity is beginning to kick in, especially in people, as I say, who were not practicing the guidance that we are so strongly recommending. The other thing is that with the numbers of doses of vaccine being given out, and especially because of their fact that they are targeting nursing homes, the elderly, those were the ones who had the highest risk of severe illness and dying. So we should see actually even stronger drop-offs in a few more weeks here of deaths, even more so than cases, because of that issue of targeting of our vaccinations.
So if we reach herd immunity rather quickly within the next couple of months, would that indicate that we could be looking at pretty much a full reopening of our economy by the fall?
I'm hopeful that we will see a much more robust opening of our economy by the fall. I am a little bit, wouldn't quite put it to April for reaching herd immunity. I think we're going to have to still see some more vaccines. I would think, though, by summer, late summer, we really will see a situation where there's a marked decrease in the number of cases due to both the natural immunity that people have gotten, because we did have so much disease circulating, as well as the rollout of the vaccination program that is then giving people artificially acquired immunity.
I want to ask you about another point McCarry made in his piece, which I think is important to discuss. And that is, he took issue with the public health officials who asked him not to write about this and talk about it for fear that it would, public behavior would change in a way to the detriment of public health and that it would cost people's lives. And McCarry said in his piece, essentially, that that's a bad public health practice. The public should be told the truth and urged at the same time to engage in behavior which is going to protect lives. This is not mutually exclusive. And I go back to the early masking advice, where early on public health officials said, "No, there's no evidence that masking provides any benefit," because they were concerned that people were going to go out and there would be a run on surgical masks and N95 masks, and then frontline healthcare providers wouldn't have access to them. And I think things like that damage trust in public health when something is being said that really has an ulterior motive, as opposed to being straight to people. Well, yeah, in every other airborne infectious disease cases, we believe masks have been beneficial, but please don't go out and buy them. You know, use something homemade instead, because use cloth or something, because our frontline healthcare workers need the surgical and N95 masks. And I just wonder your thoughts about the messaging and which side do you come down on?
Sure. Well, I think firstly, in my mind, it is an absolute necessity for public health to be open and transparent with the population. That's how you gain trust, and that's how you maintain trust. So I think we should always be giving the message that we have, that we know, so that people have that knowledge. With respect to the mask that you particularly brought up, actually, I think that in reality, what was happening at the beginning is we did not appreciate the degree of asymptomatic transmission that was going on. And so, therefore, that was the reason for not having masking at the beginning. But when the science came along and we showed, hey, that, you know, asymptomatic transmission is actually much higher than we had anticipated, that's when everybody was then asked to wear a mask. Now, they were said to use a cloth mask as to hair, compared to going out and trying to compete with the healthcare system who needed to have surgical N95 masks. So I think that actually that's how I visualize what happened at the beginning, was that the first evidence of no mask was, I mean, message of no mask was because of the fact that we did not think there was that much asymptomatic transmission. Then when we found it was, we recommended masks. And then when we recommended masks, because there were still shortages of personal protective equipment, we recommended cloth masks. So that's how I see it.
Okay.
I think it's very important to always be open and transparent.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley, UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, with us on Air Talk. Sarah in Santa Monica wants to know, should we be concerned at all about the Moderna vaccines that are stuck in trucks or wherever they are in the South, not able to get to Los Angeles, that they could expire or be spoiled as a result of the delay?
A good question. It is my understanding that although they cannot get transported because of the airplanes not flying and things, they are still being stored in proper temperatures, and so that and it will not expire in that amount of time. So I don't think there's any concern. It's just a concern of having to delay our programs.
All right. Well, and we know it's not going to overheat, right? Given, the terrible cold spell that they're facing in parts of the country, at least the vaccines are going to be, we assume, in a colder environment. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Erin in Tarzana says she's concerned that after even the two doses of a vaccine, that the efficacy may not last very long, and wonders we're going to have to be doing this yearly, such as with flu shots.
Erin, it's a good question, and the answer to that really is not yet known, and that's exactly what the scientists, the vaccine experts, are going to be looking at over time to see how do each of these vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, how do they perform over the long haul as well? And it will be that information that will be able to judge whether we need to do any booster doses, and if so, how often that might be.
All right. Let's see. Kim asks, once someone is fully vaccinated, can they still carry COVID? Can they pass it on to me since I have yet to be vaccinated? This is a daily question we get about what's called shedding of the virus. Dr. Kim Farley, are there studies going on right now to try and determine to the extent that someone protected from COVID-19 can still transmit it from their person onto someone else who's not protected?
Kim, it's a good question. And Larry, you're exactly right that that's a hot $64,000 question right now that's being looked at very closely through research to see what amount, if someone who has had the full vaccination schedule then gets exposed to coronavirus, will they, certainly they'll be protected, but will they be a source of transmission to others? Some vaccines that we have, measles vaccine, for example, no, you're not going to be a source of transmission to others. Another vaccine, we have inactivated polio vaccine, for example, protective for the individual, but it's still possible if you were exposed to wild polio virus for you to transmit it to someone else. So I think we're just, the jury is out a bit on this, so I think it's still important for someone who is vaccinated, that is around people who are not vaccinated, to still take those precautions until we have that information or until those persons they're around are also vaccinated.
We have a story that's just moved in the time we've been talking, Dr. Robert Kim Farley. Public health officials here in California just loosened the rules for youth sports, allowing all outdoor sports to resume in counties where COVID-19 case rates are at or below 14 people per 100,000. The new guidance clears the way for baseball, softball, gymnastics, cheerleading to resume immediately for at least 27 counties, including places in the most restrictive tier of the state's virus designation. High contact outdoor sports like football, basketball, and rugby can also resume under that standard, but only if all coaches and players 13 and older get tested once a week. Test results must be available within 24 hours of competition. 27 California counties currently have case rates at or below the 14 per 100,000, the largest of which is Santa Clara County up in the South San Francisco Bay Area. 16 other counties have case rates between 14 and 20 per 100,000, including Los Angeles, San Diego, Sacramento, and Fresno counties. So Dr. Robert Kim Farley, your thoughts about this and the potential for outdoor youth sports to resume?
Yes, Larry, I think this is another good example that we were talking earlier about of the, you know, gradual opening up of our economy and the activities that we're doing. So that, again, these are outdoor activities, so they are lower risk than something indoors. And when we have the community transmission rates becoming low, again, as you rightly pointed out, this is not L.A. County yet with those rates, but those are the types of things that if we keep with these guidelines, we should be able to slowly start doing more and more things. And certainly then by fall, we should be able to be coming back into a much more normal process of life.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley, it's always a pleasure. We thank you so much, sir, for being with us and wish you a wonderful weekend. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Just got my second dose yesterday.
Oh, very good. How are you doing? You having any effects from it?
No, I'm in good shape. So anyway, I think I'm 73, so it's probably a good thing to have had.
It is. It is a good thing. Are you Pfizer or Moderna? Which team are you on?
It's Pfizer, done at CSUN, and I was very impressed with the throughput and professionalism at the site.
That's great. Thank you, sir, again. Have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
You too.
Dr. Robert Kim Farley is UCLA Fielding School of Public Health, professor of epidemiology and community health sciences. He's been the director of Los Angeles County's Division of Communicable Disease Control and Prevention and former senior official with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization. Coming up, we talk with Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer, who's just released a series of initiatives that he says his office is going to undertake to deal with criminal justice and disparate outcomes under the law. He'll be with us in just 1 minute on Air Talk.